my concern.
Thank you very much. I'm a research fellow in image analysis at the BRC, cross-cutting imaging theme, and today I'll give a brief overview of image analysis methods in general. I'll talk a little bit about big data and about three collaborative projects between the cross-cutting imaging theme and the MSK theme. This video here is just to show how integrated computer vision image analysis and machine learning already is in our daily lives, whether we know it or not. And similar methods that are applied here to natural scenes can also be applied to medical images. And of course, the choice of method always depends on what we would like to know. So this is very nicely illustrated in this pyramid, which was published in 1989 by Akoff, and then more recently extended by Franchi. And it shows this transformation from simple data, which is in our case just images or a bunch of numbers, to structured and organized information, and further to knowledge by providing context and learning from this information. However, ultimately, what we would actually like to have is a method to support the decision making and predictions, or in other words, precision imaging with quantitative imaging methods to optimize the diagnosis and optimize treatment selection. Now, one group of methods that can help us to get there and got a lot of attention over the last few years is machine learning, and in particular, neural networks. When we look at the different types of neural networks in medical imaging, on the top left, we can see that convolutional neural networks make up the majority. Most of the published methods have still focused on segmentation, detection, and classification, mainly of pathology. There's also been a lot of work done on the brain. And most of the modalities for image acquisition are magnetic resonance imaging, microscopy, and CT. Now, one reason why neural networks are so powerful is because they can model highly nonlinear relationships. And I won't go into too much detail, but here's an example of a CNN with the aim of classifying handwritten digits. The typical structure of CNNs contain multiple different layers, mainly convolution layers and pooling layers. In convolution layers, different filters are applied to the image, providing us with a feature map for each of those different filters. And during the training with labeled data, expert segmentations, these filters are iteratively updated. Pooling layers, the second type that I want to mention here, they perform the downsampling and compression of these features into something a little bit more accessible and allow the featuring, the filtering at different scales of the images. So based on these features, the CNNs provide us with probabilities of the image to belong to each of those classes, and we can make the final classification in the end. Now, in the past, it has been shown that the more layers we have, the more accurate those systems are, and the more nonlinear relationships we can model, and this is what we call then deep learning. Now, the main reasons why machine learning has only recently become more popular is the availability of computing resources, on one hand, and the availability of large quantities of data. I know that in the medical domain it's not always accessible, but I think we're slowly getting there. And two very good examples are the UK Biobank, which has information of about 500,000 subjects. It is very homogeneous data, including lifestyle, environment, medical history, physical measures. It has samples of blood, urine, saliva samples. Genotyping was performed in all of the participants. 100,000 subjects have activity monitoring, and 20,000 of these subjects have repeated measurement. And in terms of imaging, eventually we would like to have around 100, there would be around 100,000 images of around 100,000 subjects in the biobank of the brain, heart, abdomen, bones. In late 2016, around 5,000 were already completed, and there are regular new releases every year. The second database is from the Osteoarthritis Initiative. It contains baseline X-ray and MR images from almost 5,000 participants. There were follow-up images from in regular intervals and manual MOIC scores for around 3,000 images. Now, finally, I'd also like this definition of what big data actually is, and I've read a lot of them, and I think this was my favorite one. The data that contains greater variety arriving in increasing volumes and with ever higher velocity. And the more practical definition that I've come across is, if it fits in an Excel spreadsheet, it's not big data. Now, finally, I would like to present some of the work which was done in collaboration or supported by the BRC MSK team. And the first project was implemented by my summer intern, Raphael, and its aim was to automatically segment cartilage with machine learning. We got a set of high-resolution osteoarthritis knee images from the Osteoarthritis Initiative that I just mentioned, from around 88 patients. We also got manually annotated label maps for six different types of cartilage. And we were interested in exploring how multiple networks of the same architecture and trained on the same data perform when we just generalize the classes. So what we did is we trained two convolutional neural networks, one of them on a two-class model, so it was capable of deciding whether a voxel is part of cartilage or no cartilage. And we trained a second CNN with the same architecture on all of the different types of cartilage. And in the end, we fused the results of both of those CNNs, and which provided us with the final result. The training took around almost 70 hours. It was done on 122 images, and then we tested it on 24 images that were left out in the training procedure. And results were very impressive. Compared to very recently published methods, our implementation was overall more accurate. With larger overlap meshes for almost every type of cartilage. Our 85% overlap comes very close to manual segmentation, considering that there is inter and intra-rater variability when it's done manually. And it's even more impressive when we consider that the application of our method to a new unseen image took only around 1.6 seconds. The goal of our second project was to develop a method to improve the time-consuming manual segmentation of bone marrow lesions. We got a set of protein density images from our colleagues acquired in-house, and for each patient we had sagittal, axial, and coronal scans. All of them had a very high in-plane resolution, but a very low through-plane resolution. So the processing pipeline that we developed was applied by a trained radiologist, Yasmin, and it includes the bias correction, so this can be seen here, to get rid of this non-uniform bias field. In the next step, Yasmin outlined a region of interest with a few clicks. In the next step, automatically, hyperintense regions are identified and highlighted. And these can then manually be adjusted and just confirmed with a double click. Similar to this cartilage segmentation project I mentioned before, in the future, we'd also like to use machine learning to maybe fully automate it. In our third project, we used these images and the corresponding labels to construct an average atlas of the knee and a topographical map which shows the distribution of the bone marrow lesions, the probability. So the sagittal, coronal, and axial scans were upsampled and fused into one high-resolution isotropic image, here shown on the right, top right. And these high-resolution images were then iteratively registered to their average and thereby creating a crisper and crisper average atlas with every iteration. As a side product, we also got deformation fields between each subject and this average atlas, which can then be applied to the corresponding label maps, which can be transferred to the space of this average atlas. And you can see here, the average atlas is very crisp and detailed. We can see some leakage of the label maps due to registration errors, which we're currently trying to improve. But this BML topography can then be in the future further used for mechanistic studies into the link between spatial location of BMLs, joint disease, and also pain, since BMLs at the specific location might contribute different to osteoarthritis pain and structural progression. Finally, I would like to finish this presentation by drawing your attention to two projects of PhD students. The first one is Edward's project, who is currently implementing and working on novel protocols for the acquisition of images in the upright scanner in standing position. And the second one is from Yasmin, where she's currently investigating peripheral and central mechanisms of osteoarthritis pain. There will be a little bit more details about these two projects by Dorothy, which will follow this presentation. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Studies there and the methods.
The presentation,
I think you closed it down too quickly so that you brought Dorothy on already.
No. I was just quietly trying to bring my presentation up while you asked questions. Oh, okay.
No, you're not going to get asked any questions there, so okay. Thank you very much for good behaviour there. Right.
I don't know what my presentation is. Was it not uploaded?
Fire away. Oh, that's not your presentation. No.
Not quite sure I can manage that.
That's why you would. I can now see you were trying to find your presentation.
Yes. So you've heard from Chris, it's one
do you
of.
Need the,
So while we try to bring the presentation up, so Christoph was a fantastic example. He's one of the four imaging BRC fellows who all are working in methodological phase, trying to boost the biomarkers that we are developing in order to feature and supporting all the aspects that we've heard all morning. So it is cutting across from the joint theme, from the phenotyping theme, and the brain theme as well, and the metabolic one. And if my slides come up, I will